I'm Duarte Geraldino. You're listening to The Takeaway. Tanzina Vega is off. We continue our week-long series on guns and policing now. You're going to learn about police consent decrees and their role in shaping policing in America. Protests erupted in 2014 in Ferguson, Missouri, after police shot dead Michael Brown. He was an unarmed black teenager, and after that, new questions arose about police accountability in Missouri and beyond. The Obama Justice Department opened investigations in several police departments across the country. It aggressively pursued consent decrees with departments in places like Ferguson, Baltimore, and Cleveland. Now, these decrees were meant to be partnerships between the police force and the community to improve policing and curb civilian deaths. They involved measures like training on bias and de-escalation. But in Chicago, where the Justice Department found a pattern of excessive force by the police department, the city had a local consent decree. The federal government did not create that consent decree, and that's a point you want to keep in mind, because over the past few years, the Trump administration has largely limited federal consent decrees. Sheila Betty is a clinical professor of law at Northwestern University. She is also director of the Community Justice and Civil Rights Clinic. She's here to explain what changed with consent decrees under the Trump administration.
Well, what we saw once the Trump administration came into power was a real abdication of the Department of Justice's responsibility to protect communities from these types of civil rights violations. So there was a real backing away of the use of this tool. As a matter of fact, the Trump administration attempted to ensure that a consent decree in Baltimore would not go into effect. The Trump administration also filed here in Chicago a legal pleading asking the judge here to ensure that the consent decree here wouldn't go into effect. So the hostility to consent decrees isn't just about the administration not enforcing them, but actively working against this tool.
Yeah, Sheila, but isn't the Chicago consent decree different from the federal decrees? How did it come to be implemented?
So the Chicago consent decree is the only consent decree in the nation that is between the city of Chicago and the state attorney general. After the federal Department of Justice, it was very clear, was not going to take any action to redress the policing violations, community groups, including Black Lives Matter and the NAACP, filed a lawsuit seeking a consent decree. Later on, the state attorney general filed her own lawsuit, and it was the result of these pieces of litigation that the consent decree developed here in Chicago.
So I understand that local oversight is key. Why is it so important that the decree focus on a local oversight, say, instead of federal oversight of the Chicago Police Department?
Well, one of the reasons why we're so hopeful about the effort here in Chicago is because the effort is intensely local. Eventually, all consent decrees, even incredibly strong consent decrees, go away. And the idea is that if we can build up the local infrastructure for accountability and for oversight, then the transformations that we'll see in a police department will really be sustainable.
What about Chicago's mayor, Lori Lightfoot? How is she responding to the decree?
The city's report card on the decree is not very good. The city is out of compliance with just about every single relevant provision. Now, that's not surprising. Most consent decrees take quite a while, 5 to 10 years to get into compliance. But there are some changes that could have and should have happened here immediately that we haven't seen.
And what about the Chicago Police Department itself? Are they operating any differently now that this decree is in place?
Well, there's been some changes in policy. There's been some changes in training. I think it's fair to say that we have not seen those changes trickle down onto the street. There was an incredibly troubling incident last week where police officers shot in a CTA train station, shot a man for an ordinance violation. Which was just a shocking abuse of police power, given what that video demonstrated. Now, the mayor did immediately say, based on social media accounts, that shooting was incredibly disturbing. Those two individuals have been stripped of their police powers, which is something that we've not seen happen so quickly before. But the question still remains, how could two police officers in a police department that has been so notorious for horrific police shootings engage in such behavior, particularly when a consent decree is in place.
You describe the video of what happened as disturbing, but what exactly happened?
Well, what the video shows is that these two officers attempted to arrest this man for an ordinance violation because he changed trains on the CTA. When he tried to get away from them, he went up the escalator, and one of the officers is depicted shooting that man as he's running up the escalator. The video is disturbing on so many levels. One, you know, what are we doing? Why are police policing people in the CTA in that manner? Two, sort of shooting a man who was engaged in an ordinance violation, something that isn't even necessarily an arrestable offense. And then three, the sort of really careless use of a firearm in a CTA station during rush hour, what could have happened to other people. It was just pure luck that wasn't a larger tragedy than it was. So it does suggest that we have a long way to go before the culture of violence in the Chicago Police Department is redressed.
Sheila, one of the interesting aspects of this consent decree is the requirement that police officers document every single time they point their gun at someone. That requirement is causing a little bit of a backlash, right?
That's right. Now, the law is very clear that when an officer points a gun at an individual, that's a use of force. That is a use of force that can cause incredible harm, that's very traumatic for people who've gone through that experience. And in many other consent decrees, it's treated like any other use of force, where it has to be fully documented, and then it's evaluated by supervisors to ensure that gun pointing was appropriate and in line with policies and procedures. Here, we have a police union that fought very hard against having those kinds of requirements related to gun pointing. And as a result, what's happened here is that there is some data tracking that will happen, some reporting in the form of a phone call, but we don't have the same kind of intensive reporting on gun pointing that happens in other jurisdictions.
You think that the consent decree will help change the way the Chicago Police Department operates?
I think the consent decree has the potential to be very transformational. I think part of the reason why is because it's the only consent decree in the country where the people who are most affected by abusive policing practices have the ability to monitor and enforce the decree. I think that's a difference that I think we'll see. I also think that consent decrees provide transparency and accountability that are really unparalleled, given the power that police departments have over communities.
Sheila Betty is a clinical professor of law at Northwestern University. She's also director of the Community Justice and Civil Rights Clinic. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.